The J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you after another full week of J1 action. Sam, as we've been saying all along, all these games are just running together, but I think you can really see the fatigue starting to set in for a number of these clubs, can't you? It's pretty much they're all running on fumes at the moment.
Yeah, it does seem that way. All these fixtures piling up. I thought Sunday and Saturday were probably the worst weekend in terms of overall quality. I thought, yeah, the fixtures have really caught up with a lot of teams, but at least it's the J League. We're not going to be short for any entertainment.
Most definitely, and yeah, us podcasters are also running on fumes at times, it could be said, but yeah, it was a nice to meet up with John Steele last Wednesday and chat about the highlights of the midweek round. I got to watch Gumba and Yokohama F. Marinos as chosen by the patrons, and yeah, John was handed the Avispa Fukuoka visit to Niigata, which also turned out to be a decent game. So yeah, hopefully we provided some decent entertainment for the patrons, Sam.
Yeah, well, it absolutely was. I very much enjoyed it, and yeah, let's not forget your major announcement at the end. So congratulations on that. If you'd like to tell the masses what you might be doing in a couple of weeks.
Yes, yes. Okay. Well, my secret's out behind the paywall now, if you like. Yes. So I've been asked by the J League to provide commentary for their international YouTube feed on the Levain Cup final. So yes, I was offered that, and very gratefully accepted the offer. Of course, it's turned out that FC Tokyo are actually playing in the game, but rest assured, if you're a Kashiwa Reysol supporter out there, that yes, I will have my neutral hat on. My red and blue glasses will well and truly be left at home on that afternoon, and yeah, just really looking forward to getting prepped for it, and yeah, hopefully it'll all go smoothly on the day.
Yeah, wish you all the best for that, and I'm looking forward to your wonderful tones on my TV that Saturday.
Oh yeah, you don't get enough of me every single week, Sam. Yeah.
Absolutely not.
Yes, yes. Well, yeah, as I say, looking forward to it, and yeah, it's been a while since I've done a game, but yeah, looking forward, as I said, to getting stuck in, and yeah, hopefully it'll be a cracker on the day. Yeah, goodness knows what the two teams will serve up, but I'm very, as I say, very much looking forward to it. So, yeah, let's jump into what happened in match day 23 over the weekend. Then, Sam, it ended up being a very good week for the leaders, Kawasaki, and also Cerezo Osaka, who moved back up to second spot. Both of those two teams were the only teams to win both of their games on Wednesday and then on the weekend. I think probably in the last month or so, Sam, we've probably been happy to let Kawasaki slip down our running order, but yeah, I think it might be time for a proper Kawasaki-gasm, if you like, after the leaders got revenge on their only league loss of the season thus far, when Grampus and Nagoya Grampus headed to Todoroki on Sunday night, and well, they were pretty summarily dispatched.
Yeah, it was a pretty good professional performance again from Kawasaki. To go 12 games, winning all of them, is a fantastic record for them. You don't know when that's going to stop either. They just look very comfortable. They eased to the victory in Sanfrecce against Hiroshima in midweek. It wasn't necessarily a game where they went out of second or third gear. And really, in this game as well, the first half especially was played at a bit of a walking pace, but Kawasaki know that they can turn on the style at any moment. And in this game, you don't necessarily view Kawasaki as a set-piece team at all, but yeah, three goals from set pieces, just another facet to their game.
Absolutely. So how were you feeling pre-match, Sam? As we know, yeah, Nagoya had turned Kawasaki over in their first league meeting of the season. Frontale were without Yu Kobayashi and Ryota Oshima. Both of those players were not included in the match day squad. But yeah, we know obviously the depth of the Frontale squad. And yeah, were you confident enough that they would be able to cover those two key absences?
Well, they are massive losses, both of them. But yeah, they have got great players behind them. Morita and Tanaka can fill in that midfield. Kendo Nakamura back from his injury. He plays maybe one in three, but he still has the class to play. And he was fantastic in this game. And up front, I mean, Leandro Damian as a second choice striker is not bad at all. So they do have a lot of options. I have worried about them occasionally when they've played without Osimhen. Maybe there's not the cutting edge to their play that there often is, and maybe that was the case in this game. It wasn't like they were cutting apart Nagoya and creating chances for fun as they do in other games, but they managed to deal without them. They found other ways to score, and yeah, they weren't really threatened by Nagoya. Nagoya were a little too defensive, in my opinion. When they played at home, they were a lot more on the front foot in terms of their pressing and causing issues for Kawasaki. This one, perhaps just due to the tiredness from the several games that they've played, but they weren't quite on it as much as that. And you have to be at the top of your game to beat Kawasaki. And on this night, Nagoya weren't quite.
Yeah, I wonder, though, I agree that, yeah, well, from the highlights, you've watched the whole game, of course, it did look, though, that Grampus had the best of the early chances when Naoki Maeda tried a curler from the edge of the box, but it didn't quite curl enough to land inside Jun Sung Ryong's far post in the 13th minute. But, from the highlights anyway, that looked like it was as good as it got for Nagoya before Frontale ultimately took the lead just before halftime.
Yeah, really, the game was fairly lively for that first 10-15 minutes. Maeda did have that chance, but Daniel had another header blocked, and Jessiel had a header just wide. So there were chances for both sides then. Then the game kind of tailed off for a long while until Kawasaki ratcheted it up towards the end of the half. So, and Nagoya then didn't really come into the game until it was a bit too late. I think Mateus had a couple of decent efforts. That one first-time shot that Jung got down well to save. But, yeah, otherwise, Nagoya weren't much as an attacking threat.
Fair enough, then. So, yeah, 7 minutes before the break, Al Tanaka fired just wide with a low drive after an intricate passing move that involved about five or six players and about 15, 20 passes before, yeah, Tanaka's fancy feet in the box gave him a little bit of space for a shot between three Grampus defenders. But as I said, yeah, he pulled it just wide. But then, yeah, 2 minutes before the break, Frontale went in front. And we've seen Kaoru Mitoma score some spectacular goals this season, Sam. But, he's hardly had an easier one, I don't think, than the one that he scored to give Frontale a 1-0 lead. Shogo Taniguchi headed on Tanaka's corner, and Mitoma was unmarked at the far post to volley in instinctively from 2 yards out. So I guess, as we've been saying, it's pretty much, well, just rewards for a first half in which they were slightly better.
Yeah, I think so. And it just goes to show that they work on pieces as well in the training. And this is a perfectly moved corner. Taniguchi running in from deep, getting to that front post and getting his flick on. And Mitoma in the right place at the right time. And that's half the battle. And, yeah, he wasn't going to miss from there. And Nagoya will be a little disappointed the way that they've conceded from three set pieces. If you're going to lose to Kawasaki, you want it to be from just the blind football that's taken you apart, but you really should be doing better from set pieces. And Nagoya, yeah, for whatever reason, they just weren't on it today, well, in that game.
Yeah, and I've just checked again, Sam, but the J-League is still insisting that this second goal is Jeziel's. I reckon he was actually heading it back towards Kengo Nakamura, who floated in a free kick from the left. Well, yeah, that's being a bit harsh on Jeziel. Basically, he was heading across goal by the looks of it. But, his header was diverted past a helpless Mitch Langerak by Shinosuke Nakatani. The J-League continue to award that goal to Jeziel, though other outlets have ruled it a Nakatani own goal. 2-0 to Frontale in the 57th minute, and then after Mitoma's 64th minute shot was deflected out for a corner by Grampus captain Yuichi Maruyama, a Frontale short corner routine ended with Kengo Nakamura crossing to the back post, where Jeziel rose highest and definitely deserved this goal, powered his header back across Langerak. So we are 3-0 and cruising. Late on, Mateus drew a fine save from Jun Sung Ryong with a crisp strike from inside the D. But yeah, Frontale saw out an 11th straight win, bettering their run from the restart of 10 consecutive wins and, extending a J1 record for consecutive victories. Absolutely stunning, Sam. As I said, we've probably given them short shrift and taken them a little bit for granted in the last month or so. But this is historic. This we've never seen a season put together like this before in J1 history. And if Neil Debenham was here, he might still be pouring cold water on it. But I mean, surely even Neil knows now that it's done and dusted. And hopefully he can sit back, relax, and enjoy the fruits of this team's labour in their last 10 games, because they're already, they're most definitely on a historic pace, but they've already bettered the points totals of some previous champions, Sam.
Yeah, that's right. I think it was Dave Phillips on Twitter. I think everyone should follow him if you're not already. He does a lot of good work with statistics at Love Football on Twitter. But yeah, he tweeted that Kawasaki have now had enough points to win the 2005, the 2008, the 2012, the 2013 and the 2014 titles. And that's with 10 games to spare. It is absolutely incredible. The achievement is absolutely superb, especially when you consider this season is a season like none other. There's no way a team should be having this level of consistency when they're playing every 3 and 4 days. So, absolute full credit to Kawasaki. They're on for definitely a points record, I'm pretty sure. And who's to back against them going the rest of the season unbeaten?
Absolutely. Well, I actually hadn't seen Dave's tweet, Sam, and I didn't realise he was still paying attention to the J-League. He's just stolen my thunder there, because, I had exactly the same stats pointed out, and with their next win or draw, they will either match or better Kashima's total from 2009 as well. So, it's absolutely unbelievable. 72 points is the record for a single stage J1 season, set by about four or five different teams, actually. That seems to be the peak that anyone has reached in a single stage season. So Frontale are going to absolutely smash that with 10 games to go, and they might set a pace that is almost impossible to match in the future, because goodness knows if we're going to ever have a season like this again. Hopefully not, where everything is so condensed, but just the way they've handled things from start to finish, apart from opening day when they had their customary home draw against Tosu, Sam. But yes, basically since the restart, they've played 23 games and they've won, 22 of them? 21 of them. We haven't given them enough credit in recent weeks, so forgive us, listeners, for pushing the boat out a little bit here. But it's the whole goal difference is better than any other team's goals for column doesn't quite hold anymore, because the F Marinos have managed 52 goals, but they're the only team that can better Frontale's goal difference of 49. So it's just been remarkable from go to woe, and let's hope they can. Apart from that Halloween game when they host FC Tokyo, let's hope they can keep their foot on the gas for the remainder of this season and see what is entirely possible, because up until this point, we didn't think anything like this was even fathomable.
It's not like they've at any point taken their foot off the gas this season. They've had the occasional game where they've not quite played to their highest levels, but after a game or two down the line, they're back up to where they have been. They've just been absolutely magnificent. And it's just a bit like Michael Olunga. He's the player that has just scored so many goals, we don't give him the credit he deserves. We just expect him to score. Kawasaki have been a team, we just expect them to win every week, and not really taking into stock just what an achievement it's been.
Absolutely. So well done, Frontale. A comprehensive home win over Nagoya. Revenge well and truly exacted, and they continue to roll, and 11 consecutive victories, and goodness knows where that run will end. We mentioned that it was a great week for Frontale, of course, as it usually is, and it was also a tremendous one for Cerezo Osaka. On Wednesday night, they beat bottom club Shonan 1-0 at home, a kind of underwhelming result, Sam. And Yokohama F Marinos rocked up to the Yanmar Stadium on Saturday, the only game in J1 to be played on Saturday. I was expecting a fairly cagey affair, and so to see the final score of Cerezo Osaka 4, F Marinos 1, with their goal coming as a scant consolation through Kota Mizunuma in second half stoppage time. Well, you can consider me absolutely flummoxed. How did they do it?
Well, first half, they didn't really do it. They scored early through Okano, but really, Yokohama were, as you'd expect with Yokohama, a lot of possession, a lot of decent chances. I think Marcos Jr. hit the post. They had a goal disallowed for offside. So it was just, the first half, you'd say Yokohama were the better team, but Cerezo had just about managed to hold on to a 1-0 lead. But then second half, Cerezo and Yokohama both kind of transformed, especially, I think, just after the second goal when Okano scored from a tight angle. But Cerezo then went for it. They still are sitting deep, but they're just playing these passes. And Yokohama, they just looked a tired team. They just didn't look really with it. They weren't following their runners anymore. They weren't pressing as high as they should have done. They weren't really creating the chances that they should have either. It just looked like a team that were running on empty. And Cerezo, because they're playing a style where they don't necessarily have to expend as much energy. They sit deep, they look for the break. They've got players like Sakamoto and Kiyotake who will just find the passes. And they had runners from midfield in Okano, and then Toyokawa, when he came on, fantastic little cameo from him. He's done very little since he's joined back from Yukon in Belgium, but it was a terrific performance from him, and Cerezo's second half fully deserving of the 3 points.
So was this a little bit Frontale-esque from Cerezo, Sam? Once they got the second goal, did they sniff blood? And rather than try and sit back on their lead, they just brought Toyokawa on, and they sensed blood in the water, and they absolutely pounced. I mean, 3 goals inside 15 minutes to ultimately well and truly put this game to bed.
To an extent, it wasn't like they had all the possession. They were camped in the Yokohama half. They were still quite deep and just picking them off, but they were picking them off at the right moments and always looking to still go forward. Occasionally, you'll see a Cerezo team get a 1 or 2-0 lead and just then look to shut up shop. So I think they did sense that Yokohama were there for the taking in this game, so they kept bringing on at least attacking substitutes, or at least like for like, and they were, terrific. They picked them off. And Toyokawa looked like a completely different player. I mean, his goal and Cerezo's third. I mean, it could be in contention for our little poll.
Ooh, big call. But yeah, okay. Well, it was a particularly good goal. I'll grant you that, Sam. So it was a pair of braces for Cerezo then. So Sam's mentioned that Hiroaki Okano gave Cerezo an early lead in the 10th minute, and then he made it 2-0 in the 67th. And as Sam said, firing in from a tight angle at Yuji Kajikawa's near post. A masterstroke from Mr. Lotina to bring Yuta Toyokawa off the bench just a minute before the second goal, in fact. And then, Toyokawa helped himself to a 10-minute brace. But, they were both balls over the top, but Toyokawa's finished them both extremely well. The first one was a long ball over the top before he lobbed Kajikawa from 25 yards in the 71st minute. Then he ran on to Okuno's ball over the top before finishing neatly with 10 minutes to go. And I've mentioned Kota Mizunuma's the scantest of consolations for F. Marinos in the 91st minute. With the final kick of the game, Toshiyuki Takagi almost made it 5 for Cerezo, but his shot struck the outside of the woodwork. So, Cerezo, with their 2 wins in the week, are moving back to second spot above FC Tokyo. And they obviously have games in hand on the Gas Men. So, extremely well placed at the moment, Cerezo, to be in the running for that second spot, and with it a spot in the Emperor's Cup semi-final. Still a long way to go, of course, before we can crown anybody with that honour. But F. Marinos, their double in Osaka this past week ended ultimately in frustration, of course, the 1-1 draw with Gamba on Wednesday, and then this rather heavy defeat that sees them stay in 7th spot in the table. And, it was also, I guess, well, you factor in that draw with F. Marinos on Wednesday, Sam, was also a decent week for Gamba Osaka. So we'll cover their game next. They travelled to Oita on Sunday and rose back above Nagoya in the table, back up to 4th with a 1-0 win. Adam Milson thought he had volleyed Gamba into a 24th-minute lead only for the referee to spot that the striker's shot had gone in via teammate Shu Kurata's arm. Kurata didn't know much about it, but the correct decision was made. About the only time in this match day that the referee made a correct handball in the box decision. But yeah, ultimately Gumba won it when Patrick climbed highest to head in fellow substitute Takashi Usami's corner in the 72nd minute. There were chances for Oita late on, especially Tatsuya Tanaka's close-range header that was smothered by Ryu Takao before it could reach Masaaki Higashiguchi. In stoppage time, Oita's last chance fell to Toshio Shimakawa, but he volleyed into the side netting. So Gumba, not their fanciest of performances in this decent run they've been on, Sam, but ultimately the result is the most important thing that matters here. Oita can always be a tricky place to go, a cliche, but yeah, they'll be happy to have gotten out of there with the 3 points, I think, Gumba.
Yeah, they'll be delighted with it, because really I thought Oita had the best chances, especially second half. Ryo Takao was in a one-man battle against Toshio Tanaka, and yeah, he came out on top. There was that goal line clearance was fantastic. And really, Gamba didn't quite get going. I know you were a big fan of them in midweek. They played very well against Yokohama. They didn't seem to have the same intensity here, but you've got to a tough place to go, obviously, Oita, and they've come away with the 3 points. A very good header from Patrick. It just shows we've said it before, there's the ability that they have to rotate their strikers, have four very good strikers at J-League level. So yeah, terrific header from him, and they're just glad to get away with it. It was another one this weekend. There were a few where the games weren't great. There was not a lot between the two teams. So just to get away with the 3 points is, yeah, it's all they can ask for. And yeah, they've managed to do that.
Indeed. So yeah, the good times continue to roll for Gumba Osaka, back up to fourth, as I mentioned, and they are now well and truly hot on the heels of FC Tokyo. They trailed them by just 2 points and have three games in hand on the Gasmen, and indeed have a game in hand on the second place Cerezo, who they trailed by 3 points. So yeah, Gumba well and truly in the mix. As we all know, Tokyo endured a very frustrating Sunday away at Mitsuzawa against Yokohama FC. Lots and lots I could say about this, and Leandro's been saying quite a lot as he tweets from his couch after his, must be said, fully deserved three-match suspension for a violent conduct in the game against Gumba recently. But yeah, FC Tokyo, obviously they felt fairly hard done to in their home loss to Gumba Osaka when Hirotaka Mita was penalised for a handball in the box he knew nothing about. Well, in this game, there were a total of, I make it four cases, Sam, where a Yokohama FC player was either hit or, it was struck. One of his hands was struck by the ball. In one instance, obviously, one player was struck in both arms, completely flush by the ball. But the referee on this occasion decided not to award a penalty on any of those occasions. And I was also frustrated at the fact that the goal that's ultimately cost FC Tokyo anything from this game appeared to me to come from a player who was offside when the ball was played through to him. So rather than me rant for 15 minutes, which might be entertaining for some listeners, why don't you tell me what you thought of this game and some of the controversial incidents?
Well, I may need you to fill in some of the gaps, because the feed that I have and the YouTube highlights don't necessarily show all the controversial decisions. So I remember two from the live feed that I watched, and there was definitely the one at the end of the game, which I didn't see. I know there was a loud appeal, but I didn't see that. I'll start with the offside. I think it's definitely offside, the Yokohama goal. It's poor from Watanabe. He gets himself in a bit of a mess making an interception, but when Sanuma plays Kusano in, I'm pretty confident that Kusano is offside. And thinking back to these handballs, there was one cross in, I believe, that was hit an outstretched arm. It was definitely away from the body. That should definitely have been a penalty, so I can understand the frustration from that first one. There was then one which we've kind of disagreed with, mainly because I don't know the rules anymore of handball, but there's that one where Diego shoots on and is blocked on the line. The defender has his arms kind of tucked into his body, but it does obviously hit both arms. So it sounds like a penalty, hitting two arms, but I don't know whether it, because it's still within his silhouette, that it doesn't count as handball anymore, and it would only have been if they were outside. So I can half understand, if that's the rule, that's why that one wasn't given. And then the other two I haven't been able to see, but they're from everyone that I've seen on Twitter or wherever, it looks like Tokyo have been very much hard done to, and I don't think the referee and the officials will be on Kenta Hasegawa's Christmas card list this year.
Yeah, I mean, it was just, I mean, well, yeah, so it must be said, basically, the game came to life in the last 15 minutes, right, Sam? I mean, there were half chances for both teams. Before that, it was a fairly even game. I would say that Tokyo had the better on the run of play of the second half, kind of along similar lines to Gamba that I watched on Wednesday. They just always seemed to be in control of the game. But yeah, while it stayed at 0-0, obviously there was anything was possible. So with around 15 minutes to go, Diego Oliveira had a shot superbly tipped around the post by Yuji Rokutan. Taichi Hara blasted straight at Rokutan from Oliveira's cutback from the byline on the right. Then for Yokohama FC, Yusuke Minagawa wasted a couple of chances in quick succession. Hara just failed to get his head on a cross from Takumi Nakamura in from the right. It was Nakamura's cross that was one of the earlier handball incidents, the one that Sam's referenced, where the player's arm was away from his body, and if the referee spots that, or the linesman who's looking right at it, hopefully that should be a penalty every day of the week, according to the new laws. Yokohama FC go ahead through a goal from Yuki Kasano. He was absolutely rapt with it, and understandably so. It was his first ever goal in J1. But Yuji Tsunuma played the ball through, and Kasano was just slightly offside. That wasn't referenced at all by the DAZN commentators, that it might have even been a possibility. So that was obviously a frustrating one to watch in the 88th minute. But then, in stoppage time, to see a shot from 8 yards from Diego Oliveira, a fierce goal line blast, cannon back off Tatsuki Seko's both of his arms as he stood on the goal line, and he set himself on the goal line with his arms in front of his body. Surely you can't do that. Otherwise it's volleyball. I mean, you've got to get your arms out of the way. Again, admittedly, I don't know the rule to the letter of the law in terms of silhouettes and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, surely you just can't stand there with your arms in front of you and let the ball cannon back off you. I mean, for me, that's just absolutely ridiculous. And I mean, two Tokyo players were booked in the immediate aftermath of that after protesting, because basically, the referee just made up his mind that he wasn't going to give Tokyo anything. The last one, with the very last kick of the game, it's admittedly it's very bang bang, and I'm not even sure if it's Taichi Hara's shot or Hirotaka Mita following up after after Hara's shot was initially blocked. But finally, about 15 minutes after the full time whistle, that did make it onto a DAZN replay, and it's very bang bang, I admit, but the ball seems to come off the hand of Yuki Kobayashi as it goes out of play, and with that the referee blew for full time. He was just clearly never going to give FC Tokyo anything on the afternoon, and he just wanted to get the hell out of Mitsuzawa by the time that had happened. So hugely frustrating for FC Tokyo, for me personally as a supporter, obviously. I mean, swings and roundabouts, as we like to say in football, Sam, but when it happens against you in the game against Gumba, then swings and roundabouts means you're supposed to get a little bit of luck coming back your way. And when there are four handballs in the box and one offside goal, and the officiating team messes them all up, then you think, well, you're really not getting the rub of the green at all.
Yeah, it does seem very unfair on Tokyo the way this game has gone. Maybe you'll get the rub of the green in the Levain Cup final, so it'll work out for you there. But it looked like one of those days where nothing was ever going to go right for Tokyo. Yeah, I completely understand the frustration. I wonder if anything will come of Leandro's various outbursts on Twitter. I know he was forced by the league to delete his first tweet, which I can't remember completely, so don't sue me, Leandro, but I think it was something along the lines of the referees are pretty terrible, we need VAR as soon as possible, something like that. And I know that he's not the first one to start complaining about that. There's been Martinez and Jay Bothroyd and various others, mainly the foreign player, but they say that the Japanese players are in agreement with this. And, I mean, the refereeing has been poor for a long while in the J-League, so it definitely needs better training or better officials. Whether the... I don't know if VAR would improve it at all, because it's still the same officials operating the VAR, so it might just bring more mess to the game. But, yeah, who knows? I don't know if they're going to bring it in next season. I don't think that's been confirmed. But, yeah, it'd be interesting, just like a trial season, to see how that would improve the officiating.
Yeah, most definitely. Well, so Leandro resorted to quote-tweeting FC Tokyo supporters who were, putting clips of the various handball incidents into their tweets. So rather than him actually tweeting out his frustration, he was, just quote-tweeting others. Labeling them as I can't say anything. He was just leaving people to watch the videos that were attached and to make up their own mind. So, one of those. And there's obviously loads of supporters of other teams having a good old laugh at me, having a good old whinge at the FC Tokyo's misfortune. So, fair enough, fair dues. It was, as you say, Sam, one of those. And I can't say we deserve to win the game necessarily, but I don't think we deserve to leave with nothing. But that is indeed what has happened. And as I mentioned, slipped back below Sedozo Osaka after their excellent week. All right, well, so for Tokyo, Nagoya as well, and of course, Yokohama F. Marinos, it wasn't a great week for the ACL chasing pack, and you can throw in a couple more teams on the fringes of the fight for the ACL places, Kashima and Kashiwa as well, Sam. A couple of surprising results in their games. Well, we'll cover them in order, I suppose, as they are in the table, although Racehorse's loss is arguably the biggest story. But I guess we can cover Antlers' loss up in Sapporo at the Dome in the early game on Sunday, as not a great deal happened in that game. But, a Yoshiaki Komai goal from a superb ball from Akito Fukumori settled it in the 41st minute, a Consadole running out 1-0 victors over Kashima.
Yeah, I think this was the surprise of the round. Sapporo have been in pretty awful form, bar one victory, I think, over Tosu in recent weeks, but they celebrated Misha Petrovic's birthday with a 1-0. It was, as you say, not a lot happened in the game. It was quite dull, which is kind of weird for Kashima. They've been a lot better in the last couple of months, and they usually create chances, but in this one there was a few pop shots from the edge of the area. I think Ueda hit the post late on, but otherwise they didn't create too much. Sapporo scored the goal. It was a very nicely worked goal. Good ball in from Fukumori. And then otherwise Tanaka, I think, hit the post. But really, this was a really dull game. And Sapporo, obviously, are the team that start up first in the morning for me. And usually they serve me up a treat. But this was horrendous. This was a really poor game of football. And, it didn't set me up for the greatest day. But, good win for Sapporo. They really needed that, because they have been pretty woeful for a long time now, pretty much since Suzuki left. So I'm happy for them, happy for Misha Petrovic, and Kashima will just hope that was just one of those days and they'll look to bounce back when they next play.
Yeah, fair enough. So both of these teams have stayed in the same positions in the table after this result, so I guess they can both, Kashima will certainly hope to move on very quickly from it. One of their flatter performances in recent times, as Sam's mentioned. Everaldo, an early shot from inside the D, curled just over, and then, as Sam's mentioned, ISA Wada hit the post with 6 minutes left. But apart from that, not a lot happening for Antlers on the afternoon. And ultimately a good goal to win it, a little bit of quality on display. Komai's excellent finish, instinctive finish from Fukumori's lovely ball. But yes, the BMW Stadium was the scene of quite the boil over, where Kashiwa Reysol, who of course have been in excellent form in recent times, scoring lots of goals, they headed down to face bottom club Shonan, who made a dream start when their captain Takuya Okamoto fired in from close range at Kim Sung-gyu's near post in just the fourth minute. But then Reysol flipped the script. Michael Olunga restored parity with his 22nd goal of the season in the 22nd minute, heading in from Cristiano's corner. And what's that now? Is that, oh gee, I should know, Sam. Is that four in four between these two linking up since Cristiano's returned?
Oh, that sounds right. I'm not 100% sure off the top of my head, but they've definitely combined a lot since Cristiano's return.
Yeah, yeah, most definitely. So, yeah, well, Raisol stayed in the ascendancy, and Corsetani in the Bumare goal was called into action to make a double save just before the break from Ataru Esaka's fierce low drive and Olunga's follow-up. Then halftime substitute Yuta Kamiya put the visitors ahead 8 minutes into the second half when he slid home past Tani after Olunga won the ball back 40 yards from goal and released Esaka. So, yeah, the game looked to be going to script until a late Shonan fight back stunned the visitors. At first, Temma Matsuda volleyed in Tariq El-Yunusi's knockdown from just past the penalty spot in the 78th minute. Then 3 minutes later, the veteran Naoki Ishihara headed in Okamoto's cross from the right to mark the first time all season Bill Murray had scored three goals in a league game, and they hung on for their first win in seven games. So, well, yeah, this a lot we could say about this, Sam. Obviously, hugely frustrating result for Kashiwa after they had taken the lead into the last 15 minutes. But, well, Bomare, they've had an absolutely horrible season, as we know. But, yeah, you've got to give them a massive amount of credit for hanging on in this game and then, yeah, taking those two late chances to ultimately run out victorious.
Yeah, it was pretty incredible, really. I mean, Balmare's have had three wins this season. They've been Kashiwa, Kashima, and Gamba, which seems just all ridiculous. But they just have these performances in them. They were out of it, I thought, at 2-1 when Kamiya scored. I just thought dead and buried. But they really, especially last 30 minutes, they were right on top of this game. They saw the weakness in Kashiwa from crosses. They just peppered them in. I thought Tariq El-Yunusi played pretty well. He hasn't done a lot this season. I know he said that the Japanese summer just was, it did not work for him. He was just knackered after every game. But he was very good in this one. Kashiwa, they'd lost Taiyo Koga from the back. I mean, they'd had a lot of injuries at centre-back all season, but Koga has been that one linchpin, and he was missing from this game, and there was a notable gap, especially the first goal where Okamoto is given the freedom of the area to just walk in and knock home, and then, yeah, there was still space for Tariq and Matsuda. Very good goal from Matsuda, but still a bit too much space, and especially for the third goal, Ishihara has got so much to work with. And, yeah, it was a defensively pretty poor performance from Kashiwa, but I want to give all the credit to Shonan. I thought they kept going at this one. They, yeah, just looked really on it for the last half an hour and looked like they're still fighting, which they haven't always this season, but definitely did this one. And hopefully that's a sign of things to come for Shonan. They might be able to pick themselves up but finish this season in a positive note and take that positivity into the next season. But they really do need to build on this.
Yes, indeed. So, a third win of the season for Belmare. It moves them closer towards getting off the foot of the table. They're now just a point behind both Shimizu and Sendai. We have to cover both of their games in the last three that we need to round up from the match day 23 slate. And, it's been a horrible season for Belmare. It's arguably been even worse for Sendai. They've won just twice all season. And, their latest dreadful performance defensively came at Saitama Stadium on Sunday. If you're an Urawa fan who was stuck with your team all through this fairly ordinary season from Reds, well, then you most definitely got your reward on Sunday with a 6-0 tonking of Vegalta. We know that Reds have failed to hit the heights this season, but they, for this afternoon at least, they turned on the style and scored some excellent goals. It all got going in just the 8th minute when Kazuki Nagasawa opened their account. Daiki Hashioka did well to win the ball back in midfield, and then Shinzo Kuroki and Koya Yuruki combined to tee up Nagasawa for his smart finish. And then two goals in quick succession in the last 10 minutes of the first half took the game away from Vigalta. First, Martinez curled a superb 25-yard free kick up and over the Sendai wall and just inside Jakub Slovic's left-hand post for his first goal of the J1 season in the 36th minute. Then Kuroki fired in a penalty just under Slovic's dive after the pole had upended him in the 39th minute. 6 minutes after the break, Kuroki got his second after he headed in Yuruki's lovely floated ball in from the left. And there was no respite for Vigalta as the man who replaced Kuroki just after his second goal, Leonardo, who you mentioned, Sam, has gone missing in recent weeks. Well, he was called on off the bench and went on to bag a brace for himself. First, he hit the post. Then he fired in Martinez's cutback from 6 yards in the 67th minute and then finished off a lovely end-to-end sequence 4 minutes from time. So, yeah, this was, well, looking at the stats, Sam, it's 15 shots apiece, according to the J-League, but, yeah, 6-0, I guess, tells its own story.
Yeah, I mean, that shots, that does not tell the story at all. I mean, this was the best I'd seen Reds play all season. They were fantastic from minute one till the end. I thought a lot of the goals were really well worked. The first goal especially, the way that Kuroki and Yuruki could put them, played it into each other, the back heel to Nagasawa, yeah, terrific goal. And the last goal as well, Leonardo's, I thought, the way he brings the ball down when it's behind him, takes that first touch, brings it in front of him and fires home, terrific. But Sendai were the masters of their own downfall. A lot of the time they were giving possession away far too regularly. I thought the defending as a whole was so poor. They left Slovic open for a lot of the game. You could argue that Slovic was possibly the man of the match, despite being 6-0 down. Mm. The worst piece of defending was the Kuroki goal, the header, where nobody on this team, Sendai team, notices that Kuroki is making a run into the area. It's chipped over Shimao Mate, who doesn't have a clue what's going on, and it's so easy. And Shimao Mate has really, like, exemplified just how poor they've been this season. Last year, he was one of the surprises of the season. He was very, very good. But, yeah, since his return from injury, it's just not been there. And this was a really dreadful performance from Sendai. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're the ones that prop up the table by the end of the season.
Yeah, dreadful defensive performance from Sendai. Sam, I don't know if you caught the recent episode of Extra Time where John Steele absolutely eviscerated Jeff Chiba after their 5-1 home capitulation at the hands of Mito when, the Chiba players basically downed tools after they were, two or three goals down in the game, and it appeared that they weren't trying anymore. Was this on that sort of a level, or do we deserve to give Sendai a little bit of the benefit of the doubt on this occasion? I mean, it has been a pretty woeful season for them from start to finish. They haven't had too many hidings of a regard like this, but it was a dreadful afternoon for them, it must be said.
Yeah, I don't think any team will drop to the levels of Jeff United. So this was a particularly poor performance, but I wouldn't say they necessarily gave up. And it's not like these performances are necessarily the norm. There have been a few of them where they just defensively have been woeful and turned over pretty easily. But there have been games like last week where they played, well, not last week, a couple of weeks ago, where they played Kawasaki, where they lost 1-0, but they were very much in that game for long periods. So it's not like they've been useless and woeful all season, but there have been a few too many of the performances a bit like this Reds one, and yeah, they have to improve, because you fear for Sendai, where with all their financial problems, you think they're going to have to lose players probably next season. I don't see them necessarily being able to stay up. So yeah, the things aren't positive for Sendai, but I don't think anyone's quite at the levels of Jeff United.
No, fair enough then. All right, well, yeah, we've got two games left to review, and they were contested between teams fairly close together in the table, in the very definition of a mid-table battle. It was Hiroshima hosting Kobe. They came into the game with Hiroshima 11th in the table and Kobe 10th. Well, they switched positions after Sanfrecce ran out 2-1 winners at home, but this game ended in controversy, just as the Yokohama FC versus FC Tokyo 1 did. Kobe had changed their entire team from Wednesday's home draw against Oita, while the host Sanfrecce were helmed by head coach Kentaro Sawada in the absence of manager Hiroshi Jofuku. And just before half-time, Hiroshima took a 2-0 lead. First, Tsukasa Morishima's corner was headed powerfully home from just inside the penalty spot by Sho Sasaki. Hiroki Ikura got a firm hand to the ball, but was unable to keep it out and basically poured it into the top corner. Made it probably look a better goal than it actually was from Sasaki. Worse was to come for the visitors in stoppage time, when Ezekiel won the ball back on the touchline just inside the Hiroshima half and released Leandro Pereira, who was basically given the freedom of the Kobe half to surge forward and blast home a fierce strike in off the arm of Ikura from just inside the box in the third minute of stoppage time. Just past the hour, it probably should have been 3-0, but Pereira failed to make clean contact as he slid in on Yusuke Chajima's deflected cross. But it all got going towards the end. 6 minutes from time, Kobe gave themselves hope when Dankler strode forward and his blast from 25 yards skimmed off Sasaki and flew past a stranded Takuto Hayashi. And then, after an off-balance, Junior Tanaka had headed against the post deep into stoppage time. The game ended, as I said, basically in identical fashion to the Yokohama FC, FC Tokyo one, when Kyogo Furuhashi's cross from the right clearly struck the outstretched arm of Shunki Higashi. That's got to be a penalty every day of the week, Sam. The officials have bottled it there. And, whether Kobe would have scored from the spot or not, we'll never know. But, basically they were denied the chance for a point right at the death.
Yeah, I mean, this is another one where the live coverage and the YouTube highlights conveniently ignore this handball decision. But yeah, Stuart Smith alerted me pretty much straight away that this was a handball, clear as day, and Kobe have been harshly done to. But so they've got to be unfortunate on that case. But I thought Sanfrecce probably did deserve the win on the balance of play. Especially the back end of that first half, that it was a little bit too easy for them, especially that second goal. The defending from Kobe was pretty much atrocious. But Kobe, they started under Miura, they pretty well. They tried to play this more counter-attacking style, and it definitely is the way that Kobe should be playing, and it worked against teams that are going to go at them, like Sapporo did, like Yokohama did, like even Tosu did to an extent. But when they come up against teams like Hiroshima, who are just going to sit back and let them have all the possession in the world, they then just don't create enough and they get caught out of the back. And that's kind of what happened. It should have been 3-0 when Leandro Pereira had that opportunity. So I thought on the balance of play, Sanfrecce deserved the lead, but definitely they were very unfortunate right at the end.
Yes, indeed. All right, so the last match was contested between Shimizu and Tosu at Nihon Daira. These sides came into the game, both of them in the bottom four, and they well and truly stayed there after a 1-1 draw, where it appears, Sam, that nothing happened until Valdo gave Espols the lead with a header in the 72nd minute from Kenta Nishizawa's corner. Then 5 minutes from time, the substitute Daichi Hayashi smashed in from close range to equalise for Tosu, and then Hayashi shot against the post in stoppage time. But apart from that, I couldn't really gather too much else from this game. Probably would go down as one of the worst of the J1 season, unless you want to tell me otherwise.
No, this was a poor game between two very poor teams. Neither offered a great deal. Sometimes Shimizu can look quite impressive going forward, just then to fall apart a bit with the final ball, but in this game they didn't create a lot, nor did Sagan Tosu either. It was a little bit scrappy, it got a little bit fun towards the end. Two teams then went for it a little bit, but really a lack of quality and a really poor game, and you can tell why these two are in the bottom four.
Yeah, and I mean, we'd slightly an uncustomary performance from Espol Sema. The official J-League stats have them only registering two shots over the course of the 90 minutes. So were they just particularly off colour, or... I mean, yeah, that's a, quite a, well, now I'm looking on Google and they've got it as 5-20 to 22, where it was 2-15, according to the J-League. So, goodness knows who I should believe. But yeah, either way, it appears that the Shimizu were particularly off colour. And, I mean, Tosu, 63% possession on the road is, well, that's another eye-opening stat.
Yeah, I guess the J-League stat guy had fallen asleep midway through the first half, and you can't blame him. But yeah, yeah, it is a weird performance from Shimizu, because you expect them to dominate the ball. That's the way that they're trying to play. They always create chances, but usually the finishing is pretty poor. So it was weird for them not to be doing that. You'd have thought this was the game that they'd have seen they can win against Sagan Tosu. But yeah, they just weren't at it at all, and I don't know if there's... I'm not sure what it would be that... Because it's been a difficult season. Everyone knew it would be in trying to acclimatise to the way Klimovsky plays. And it hasn't really gone well for them. So I wonder if there's just a lack of belief in it, in the way it is. At least when you saw Postecoglou at Marinovs, there were definitely those signs where, wow, when this all clicks, this is a very, very good team. But they haven't really had that at Espols. And it's going to be difficult and an interesting one to see how long they stick with Klimovsky, because obviously he's got a plan, but there hasn't been any fruits of the labour just yet. So he's really needs to get off to a very good start next season. Otherwise, I think any goodwill might wilt away pretty quickly.
Yes, indeed. All right, then. Well, that's all of the games from Match Day 23 reviewed. And all that's left now is for us to have a quick look ahead at what's to come in the top flight in the next week or so. And Sam, your dreams have come true by the magic of scheduling and rescheduling. You have a Shonan and Tosu doubleheader to look forward to in the space of the next few days. As on Wednesday night, Belmare will host Sagan in their game that was originally postponed from Match Day 13. And then on Sunday, Shonan will travel down to Kyushu to face Tosu at the real estate agent in front of the station stadium. So an absolute barn burner here. Tosu and Shonan over two legs, with the loser to be relegated to the JFL.
Well, if that's the case, I'll definitely watch it. But yeah, Sagan Tosu, Shonan Belmare, 5 a.m. kickoff on a Sunday. It's what you live for. So I'm delighted that's standing alone on Sunday, but... Oh, dearie me, yes. They're going to be tough watches.
Yes, indeed. All right, well, also on Wednesday, there are two games that are brought forward for ACL clubs. It's Match Day 33 fixtures for Kobe, who will host Kashima, and Yokohama F. Marinos, who will entertain Nagoya Grampus. Now, amazingly, Sam, I can't find FC Tokyo's name on the midweek fixtures anywhere. It looks like Tokyo are actually going to have a full week off in between games. Well, not quite, because they played on Sunday and their next game's on Saturday. But, yeah, for the first time since early August, Tokyo will not be in action. They've played 19 straight games in a row in the league and... in the League Cup on midweek weekend all the way through, and 19 consecutive games, and now they'll finally have a few days off. And well, goodness knows, a few of them will probably go out in the city and catch Corona for all that for all the luck that we've got going for us at the moment. But yeah, Tokyo not in action until Saturday, when they host Yokohama F. Marinos in a game brought forward from Match Day 28. Try and keep up here, listeners. It's extremely confusing. Basically, the three ACL clubs have already played their Match Day 24 fixtures earlier on in the midweek games brought forward. So, there are five games on Saturday from Match Day 24, and then the Tosu versus Shonan rematch on Sunday. And, so the FC Tokyo Yokohama game is from Match Day 28. So we will have a total of seven top flight games over the weekend. And, that ends a run for F. Marinos of games against Gamba, Cerezo, Nagoya, and FC Tokyo, all in succession. And those teams sit, between second and fifth in the table as it stands. So a brutal run for F. Marinos, and they've obviously been playing midweek, weekend, etc., etc., since the start of August as well. So Yeah, brutal schedule. Yeah, I guess, well, that's probably about it, Sam. Apart from the, yeah, the Shonan Tosu doubleheader, there's, well, there's not a massive amount to look forward to, is there? That's got to be the highlight for you.
Oh, well, yeah, the rest of the games don't really matter, do they? They're just going to be outshone. So we'll have just a special, I think, next week just on these two games, this Tosu Belmare doubleheader.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. So, yeah, Frontale will not be in action over the weekend because they've already played their game from Match Day 24. That was a 2-2 draw against Kobe, one of the only three games this season in which they've dropped points. Yeah, elsewhere, I guess, Gunba Osaka Kashiwa looks pretty decent on paper. Poor old Sendai, they've just been battered 6-0 away at Urawa. Now they have to travel to Nagoya, who will be looking to bounce back off their defeat at Kawasaki. And, Reds hosting Seto Osaka obviously holds some intrigue as well. If Reds can put a performance in anything like their demolition job against Sendai, they should be a stern test for Seto and their fairly steely defense. So, still a lot to look forward to over the weekend, and Kawasaki will most definitely enjoy their break, I'm sure. All right, Sam, well, I think we'll leave it there. We did have a technical hiccup in the middle of our recording, but hopefully it's all come together seamlessly in the editing suite. Thanks for sticking with us all the way through. Great to get your thoughts again, and get your popcorn ready for the Tosu Shonan early game on Sunday. It's going to be epic.
Always a pleasure. Yeah, and I cannot wait for one of the games of the season, or any season.
All right, then. Well, that is it for this week's episode of the JTalk podcast. Sam and I would like to thank our patrons for their support on Patreon, and, of course, you for listening wherever you are. We'll be back next week to round up the week in the top flight. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The JTalk podcast. Yosh, 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 yosh.